The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
There we go, the soundtrack of BBC's coverage of the World Snooker Championship. We are joined by a man who provides the soundtrack on the commentary, the 1997 World Snooker Champion, Ken Doherty. Ken, how are things?
Very good evening. I'm grand, thank you. Yeah, not too bad.
Bit of history at the Crucible earlier today, Ken. John Higgins, his first ever Crucible century, 147. And in terms of getting that maximum break, he's the first player since Stephen Hendry against Stuart Bingham back in 2012, which I guess just goes to show how difficult it is to actually do it at the Worlds.
Yeah, I mean, over, you know, the longer matches, you know, best of 19 in the first round, best of 25, then 33 and 35 for the final, you would expect a lot more maximums over the past 8 years. But yeah, they're very, very difficult. A lot of pressure on it. It's Crucible history. And it's surprising, I think, to a lot of us because of the standard over the years has got better and better. That you'd expect more players to make maximums more regularly, and particularly at the World Championship. But it just hasn't happened. And I suppose maybe might be something to do with having the crowd here, is not having the crowd, you know, with having the crowd. Maybe players are a little bit more relaxed. I'm expecting, believe it or not, it's a big call, but I'm going to expect one more maximum before this championship is over, because we've had two once when Ronnie O'Sullivan and Ali Carter had a good few years ago now, where there was two maximums in the championship. I'm going to predict that might happen again this year.
Go on, predict to me then who's going to get it then.
Well, that's it. I'm going to say Ronnie O'Sullivan. I thought a good prediction was Ronnie O'Sullivan to get a maximum and to win the championship. It was about 25-1, I think, the title sponsors, Betfred, were offering. And I was tipping that up to all the snooker punters out there. And I think it could still be on, particularly the way Ronnie played in the first round.
Right, John Higgins might have to share that 55 grand yet. He's having to play very well in this match that he's in against Maplin at the moment as well. I mean, he needed that to try and get back into it. It's all level and looking square into tonight's session. So John Higgins been pushed to the pin of his collar here.
Yeah, absolutely. He was 7-4 down when he made that maximum as well. And of course, there was an interval which would have benefited him then, that he could relax and, you know, soak it in. Because if you make a maximum, you go straight, you're still full of adrenaline, you're still excited about it, and sometimes you can lose your concentration. But he's in a hell of a match. I mean, I've been very impressed with Kurt Maflin, the way he's played in this championship so far, and the way he's played against John Higgins, because I thought it would be a step up in class for him and what he wouldn't be used to at this World Championship, but he seems to have sort of reveled in it. And, you know, he'd be disappointed he's only 8-0, because I think against any other player, or most of the other players, he would have been at least 10-6 going into tonight's session. 8-all, Higgins stole 3 frames on the black in that session earlier, so he's well back in it, and the momentum has swung now across to the four-time champion.
You mentioned the atmosphere and how it's slightly different without having supporters in attendance. If things had gone to plan in England, we would have had some attendance for the first round last Saturday. That wasn't to be, and now we're back to the enhanced crowd noise that we heard when John Higgins put in the 147 earlier. Yeah. I wonder, does it make it any different for John, the fact that there wasn't a packed Crucible to actually see it this morning?
I think, I think we'd all love to have the crowd there, you know, because that creates the atmosphere and you sort of feed off the crowd as a player as well. And to make a maximum with, you know, nobody there, because every shot during the maximum, the crowd will be clapping because they sense, you know, a sense of sort of history in the making. When there's no crowd there, it's a little bit flatter. There's no doubt about it. And you want to enjoy it with the crowd, particularly if you do make the maximum. So it's a big difference, all right. But, you know, it's a shame we don't have any crowd here. But look at, let's just think of the positives that this tournament is going ahead. They've done some great work to get this championship going ahead. So we're just delighted, even if it's behind closed doors, at least we still have some great snooker to look forward to over the next, like, I don't know, 12 or so days.
Ken, when it comes to you and competitive 147s, the unfortunate part is people probably remember your Miss Black in the Masters final in 2000, probably more so than the one that you made in 2012.
Yeah, I know. People say, I remember where I was when I saw you win the World Championship. But do you remember the time you missed the black in the 147? Well, of course I bloody remember it, you know. I keep having nightmares about it. But it was for a car, a yellow car it was. So I just say that I didn't like the colour of the car. So that's my excuse. You know? Yeah, it didn't really bother me.
Sounds like you really didn't miss out. But it does go to show, though, I mean, how difficult it is to get a 147. You look at all the tournaments that you've played over the years. I'm sure you've banged in loads of 147s in non-competitive matches along the way.
Sure.
But when you get to that, I suppose, the tension of tournament play, it just ratchets it up.
Yeah, absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. You don't get many opportunities to do it either over the course, believe it or not, because you're so wrapped up in trying to win the frame and rather than chase 147s. But at the same time, I think for me, the thing that I look back on is the sense of history and nostalgia of making a 147 at a big event. My match was against Matthew Stevens in 2000 Masters Final, which would have been, you know, the previous one was Kirk Stevens at the Masters in 1984. So that will tell you, the sense of history and the achievement of making it. And John Higgins now has added this little feather to his cap of making a maximum at the Crucible. I think he's only one of seven players to have made maximums at the Crucible. So it's a fantastic achievement, along with all the other great achievements that he's had as well.
Yeah, it's a very small club. In terms of yourself, you were hoping to qualify for the Crucible for the first time in 6 years this season, and you got to the penultimate round of the qualifiers, played a guy you knew really well in Mark King. Didn't quite happen for you. But I was watching the telly after you'd won the previous round before, and you were feeling like obviously you were playing some very good snooker, but it's a case of you got yourself a pretty tricky opponent, which just proved a step too far.
Yeah, I mean, Mark King played great snooker. He's a very experienced player, and it showed how well he played, even when he pushed Ding all the way. He only lost 10-9 to Ding in the first round here. So, yeah, it was a difficult one for me. It's difficult in the qualifiers because, you know, every player wants to get to the Crucible and just play there. And even, you know, players like me have played at the Crucible for many, many years. It's just such a special place, you know. And I miss playing there. And that's one of the highlights. Even, you know, when you're not playing there, it's just to commentate or do the analysis on it. It's still fantastic. It's just a great venue, great atmosphere. And you get the sense of history when you walk out from those curtains and onto that Crucible floor.
I could imagine you want to go to the table at the Crucible anyway, but was the tour card in the back of your mind when you knew if you'd won a couple more rounds, you're assured of a tour card for next year?
Yeah, I suppose it was, yeah. But I don't know what's going to happen now. We'll just have to wait and see for next year. I may be offered a wild card, and if they do, then I'll... I definitely want to continue on. I'm going to the Crucible actually for the World Seniors, which starts on the Wednesday when the World Professional Championship finishes. So we play the World Seniors Championships at the Crucible. So at least I get to play there anyway. But it's in the World Seniors. But I'll wait and see what happens. I still love playing. I still love competing. I still love being involved in the other aspects of the game. And I'd like to continue for a little while longer, but we'll wait and see what happens.
Yeah, because Mark Williams mentioned you last week. He's 45. He says he reckons he's got about 5 more years to go. He said, look, Ken Doherty's 50 and he's still playing at the moment and trying to get out in the tour as often as he possibly can. Does it become more difficult when you get that bit older, Ken, and you see these kind of younger players coming up?
Yeah, I think it definitely does, you know, and also the time, your commitment to the game, you know, you have other things in your life, family and stuff like that, and other things going on. It does become, you can't do the 7 or 8 hours that I once did when I was an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old when I first came on the circuit. I can't do that anymore. So it does get a little bit harder, and the competition has got a lot stiffer, there's no doubt. But one thing that never changes is your love or the passion for the game. You know, you still love playing it. I still love the competition and competing and battling your wits against the other players, even the younger ones coming through. That love they'll never die for the game, for sure.
How do you think you get on, Ken, if you played the Ken Doherty of his mid-20s who was competing in World Finals?
Well, I tell you, when I'm now, I'll be 51 now, not long away next month. But if I was playing a 20-year-old Ken Doherty, I'd like to whisper in his ear, I know that, and give him a few pointers along the way. The Ken Doherty of 20 would give the Ken Doherty of 50 probably about 21 point start, I'd say.
Go on, what were the pointers you'd give to yourself then?
I don't know where to start. How long have we got?
Look, I'm sure it's not that long of a list now, in fairness, Ken.
I'd just say, like, keep enjoying the game, keep practicing hard. What I'd say to the young kids coming through, work hard, you know, because and keep the practice, keep the love for the game. And also, Watch the other players. Watch a lot of the likes of the O'Sullivans and the Higginses and the Williamses, you know, and all the great players. Because when I was a kid at 20, I wish I had watched a lot more snooker on TV and listened to the guys, because you can learn so much from watching it. You think you know it all when you're 20, you know, that you go in the practice table and you played a lot of tournaments. I didn't watch a lot of snooker on TV when I was that age, because I thought I'd seen it all, and I didn't want to be sort of, you know, watching what other players did. But I wish I did, because you can learn so much from watching and how they make breaks and how they go about making breaks and the tactical side. And I think that's what I would do, that's what I would say to a young sort of Ken Doherty. And also, don't be afraid to elaborate, talk to sports psychologists, talk to coaches a bit more, and try and, you know, even improve on your technique as best way as you can, you know, to get any little edge that you can. Well, it's always a plus, you know. Dennis Taylor has just walked into the room. I wish I had talked to him for many, many years over the years. I could have learned a lot, an awful lot more.
Well, you get to sit beside him on the BBC now. You get to learn plenty at this stage of your career.
I can't get a word in edgeways with him, though, when he's sitting beside me. That's the only problem, you know.
I was just thinking as well, Ken, we were looking at the Sunday papers here on Off the Ball last weekend, and they were making the point that yourself and Fergal had missed out on the chance to get to the main draw, and that some of the other Irish players who are coming through, there seems to be some very good players, particularly from Cork at the moment, but it is very difficult for them to actually make that breakthrough and get to World Snooker Championship level, or even to get enough play on the tour to actually justify financially playing. Is it difficult to actually come through now?
It is very, very difficult, you know, and Ross Bullman and the likes of Aaron Hill, who are really good players, I must say, and they've got a chance, but it's very, very difficult for them, and difficult for them living in Ireland to try and make the break. I mean, a lot of the Chinese players that you see on the tour, they live in Sheffield, they're playing in academies every day, they're playing with good, stiff competition, good practice partners, and that's what the likes of Aaron Hill and Ross Bullman and any aspiring young Irish player that wants to really make it as a professional, they've got to move, you know, they've got to go to England, they've got to play in these academies and practice with these guys all the time, because it sharpens you up, you learn so much playing these lads, and when you go to tournaments that you're really ready to take on the big boys and you've got lots of experience already before you even start. So that's what I'd have to say to him. But going to academies in Sheffield or anywhere in England costs a lot of money. So we're actually having a golf day for Aaron Hill to try and raise some money for him and hopefully get a bit of sponsorship for him for the year. So, but he needs to get away and go to England if he really wants to have a good chance there.
Yeah, I was just thinking in terms of Mark Allen, when we look at Irish interest in this tournament too, he was coming in on the back of doing really well in that championship tour event which took place in June. He got to the final. He's fourth seed going into it. We're thinking he's probably going to go deep into the tournament. He has five centuries during that match against Jamie Clark, who was a qualifier, and still loses out. Very disappointing for Mark Allen, given the form that he was in, Ken.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of my, you know, tips for this year's World Championship. The form that he was in, as you say, the way he played down that Tour Championship, I thought Mark Allen was going to go very, very deep in this tournament. I still think that, you know, he's a possible World Champion. There's no doubt about that. But he'd be very disappointed losing to Jamie Clark, a qualifier, a debutant. And the way he played, you know, he had five centuries in the match and still ended up losing 10-8. So he'd be absolutely kicking himself that this was a golden opportunity. And because of where he was in the draw as well, you know, he would have been playing Anthony McGill, I think, in the next round to get into the quarterfinals. You know, he would have had a really good chance this year, but it wasn't to be. And maybe he'll learn from that and come back stronger next year.
You were tipping up Ronnie O'Sullivan to potentially win the tournament and also to get a 1-4-7 at some point over the next 2 weeks. He really laid down a marker in his first match. He wins 10-1, no problems whatsoever.
Yeah, and record time as well for a first round win by about 45 minutes. It was incredible display. Now, he got a lot of help from his opponent, Tep Choya. But at the same time, you only have to do what you do when you get to the table. He did it in style. He looked in imperious form. And some, you know, we've been talking about this in the BBC. You know, maybe, you know, without a crowd, and even though when I've played O'Sullivan, you're playing against most of the crowd because most of the crowd want to see O'Sullivan win. It's like he's playing at home all the time and you're playing away. But he has a lot of hassle with the crowd. You know, he has a lot of stuff to do with the press. There's no press at the Crucible. There's no crowd at the Crucible. There probably won't be anybody at the stage all waiting for him. So he's less sort of pressure on him now the fact that there's no crowd, that may play into his hands. Now, it remains to be seen, but he may be very, very relaxed. And he spoke about it in interviews that he seems less sort of pressurized this year. And it might really suit him, might play into his hands. And we might see O'Sullivan the way he normally plays. Because sometimes over the 17 days for O'Sullivan, over the past few years, he's got very impatient. And after about a week or 10 days, he wants to get out of the place. He just can't handle it. So this may play into his hands. It remains to be seen, but it sort of begs the question.
When you're an opponent against Ronnie O'Sullivan, I was watching a documentary last week about Alex Higgins, who also plays remarkably quickly and remarkably in an unorthodox kind of way. Is it tricky when you're up against someone like O'Sullivan who will just run off a frame that quickly, where it could be tricky to get your own rhythm as an opponent?
Yeah, I mean, you could, you know, he's so fast. I mean, it's like 14, 15 seconds a shot. You go back to your chair, you pour a glass of water, you fill it up with ice, and he's already on 60 or 70. You know, the frame is nearly over. And when he gets onto a run, he can be very dominant, very off-putting, very hard to play. But I must say, over the times, apart from one time where he beat me in the UK final, he destroyed me. But over the years, I've loved playing up Ronnie O'Sullivan. I've loved the atmosphere. I've loved the test of playing someone like that, and the likes of Jimmy White when you used to play him in London, or Stephen Hendry. You know, you wanted to play the big boys. You wanted to see your game against theirs and how it would stand up to them. I love Ronnie O'Sullivan. I love him playing. I love watching him play. I love commentating on him. I think he's been brilliant for snooker. I wouldn't always agree with what he says after matches or in the press or stuff like that. But when he's on the table and when he's in great form, you know, in sporting terms, for us as snooker players or just lovers of the game, there's nothing better to see.
Yeah, Judd Trump in second round action at the moment. He's trying to break that curse of a first-time winner trying to successfully defend their title. He wasn't great in his first round match, but I get the feeling that that's sometimes just a case of kind of getting that rust and cobwebs out of the way after not having played for around a month coming into this.
Yeah, you would say so. But we were in the studio today when he played his the first session of the second match against Yanbing Tao. He's 5-3 down, and lucky to be 5-3 down. Could have easily been 6-2. Doesn't look himself. I thought, you know, today, after getting over that tough first round, that he would sort of just take off and start playing the way he's been playing all season. But he looks like this weight of the World Championship. At the moment, things could change. It's sort of weighing heavy on him, and that Crucible course is weighing heavy on him. He needs to get off to a good start tomorrow morning early and try and put a little bit of pressure on his opponent. But at the moment, he looks all at sea. You know, I wouldn't be backing him at the moment.
Ken, when it comes to the coverage, are you missing not having John Virgo around? He's been stuck in his house in Spain, and Hazel Irvine's been away as well. Kind of two of the mainstays, really, the coverage on the beat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we all miss JV. You know, we love him. We love working with him. He's great company. You know, we love being in the commentary box with him. We love, you know, going out for dinner and the stories. And, of course, we miss the great Willie Thorne as well, who sadly passed away only a month or so ago. Yeah, great characters. We miss Hazel. She's stuck in New Zealand. Her daughter is unwell, so we miss her too. We've got a great team, you know, and we love doing it together. We have a great laugh, but JV is badly missed, you know.
Just the final one in terms of the rest.
Nobody to say, where's the cue ball going, you know.
That warning has
we
been
can't
missing.
Say it. It doesn't sound so good when I say it, like, you know.
Well, you can't steal his phrase. In terms of how the next couple of weeks are going to play out, you mentioned multiple times there about the fact that there's no crowd there. This is players having to readjust. I'm guessing for some of them, as long as they get through week one, this will become reasonably normal once they head towards the last eight of the competition.
Yeah, don't forget, they're playing for the World Championship. So whether there's a crowd there or not, these lads are vying for that World Championship, get their hand on that beautiful cup. And of course, there's the sum of like £500,000 to go with it. So they're playing for a lot at stake here. And whether there's a crowd or not, once you're on the table, the crowd shouldn't really come into it. You got to be focused on what's in front of you and trying to win that trophy and hold that trophy aloft on the Sunday night. It doesn't get better than that.
Yeah, a couple of weeks of great snooker still to come. Ken Doherty, 1997 world champion. Many thanks for joining us here on Off the Ball.
Pleasure anytime. Thank you.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.